Hello, everybody. My name is Renata Motta. I am a sociologist at the Freie Universität Berlin. I would like to thank Professor Makat for the invitation to participate at the Citizenship Lectures Global Riots at the Universität Potsdam, and also thank all of you for your interest. The title of my talk today is Violent Matters, Feminist Solidarities Through the Politics of the Body and Nature. In Brazil, at least 9 massacres were committed against peasant and indigenous activists in the past 2 years. Violence against women and femicide have continuously increased in the past decade, with higher rates amongst black women and trans bodies. The elected victory of Jair Bolsonaro as president of Brazil in October 2018 has normalized and encouraged even more violence. On the one hand, we can situate his election as part of a global wave in which extreme right forces secured important electoral victories. These have appealed to white, male, lower middle class voters with low skilled jobs who feel threatened by the process of economic globalization and unprotected by national policies, as well as by the advance of the recognition of rights for women, non-whites, LGBTQs, and other minorities. According to U.S. legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined the term intersectionality, contemporary right-wing politicians use intersectionality for reactionary politics. Even as they criticize identity politics and blame intersectionality, they themselves mobilize an intersectional intersectionality, that is, that of a white, man, straight, middle-class subjects. Right-wing politicians provide a narrative with culprits for their fading position. The other assumes in each context specific racial, cultural, religious, ethnic, class, and gender ascriptions. These politicians strive to reimagine nations which are post-feminist, post-racial, in the sense of erasing differences. They do so by denying the existence of racism and sexism, and by doing so, they manage to keep the privileges of the powerful. On the other hand, while global patterns are also discernible in Brazil, support for Bolsonaro shows the particularities of the rise of the extreme right in relation to the political struggles and shifts in the social structure in the country. First, his support was even higher amidst the established middle and upper classes. Therefore, although he also explored a scapegoat rhetoric with a discourse with misogyny, homophobia, and racism, his discourse was also anti-poor, anti-welfare, and resonated the most with the privileged establishment and the interests of the markets and rent-seeking elites. Second, with a military performance and discourse of war on crime, Bolsonaro addressed the feelings of insecurity amongst allegedly good citizens and decent people, and thus he was able to win the support of the lower classes and the black population as well, who are mostly victimized by crime and violence, but also the most likely to be affected by state violence and punishing policies. Third, one of the main targets of Bolsonaro's hate speech were activists, in particular activists for land reform and environmental NGOs, attending the demands of one important interest group, the landed elites and agribusiness. Bolsonaro promised arming rural landlords to shoot agrarian and environmental activists. He promised lifting monitoring and sanctions against environmental crimes, and suspending the demarcation of indigenous land and other land destined to land reform, as well as legalizing land grabbing. Finally, similarly to other right-wing leaders, Bolsonaro deployed the term gender ideology to fight feminism and relied on the political, economic, and media power of neo-Pentecostal churches. However, once in government, Bolsonaro in fact empowered this interest through the appointment of a Minister for Human Rights, Women and Family, who actively fights feminism and promotes religious family ideals as state policies. Kimberly Crenshaw also called for resistance against these asymmetrical alliances of right-wing forces by engaging in intersectional alliances. In my talk, I focus on the role of feminist organizing and solidarities in forging resistance against the emergence of the extreme right in Brazil. I will look into two instances of such alliances represented by the feminist movements Ele Não, Not Him, and Marcha das Margaridas, or the Daisies March. They both have organized broad protests precisely by articulating difference as a strength, in a context in which the social and political left face enormous challenges in overcoming their cleavages to build unity in struggle. Indeed, far from restricting the agenda to what could be called women's struggles, feminist movements have led the defense of democratic politics, universal social policies, and alternative development models. Why are feminist movements taking the lead in resisting the right of the extreme right? I argue that feminist solidarities were crafted against the mounting existential threats experienced by market bodies and alternative forms of relating to nature and territories, in a context of a renewed homogenizing discourse of a body politic that aims to erase all differences in favor of a dominant embodied partiality of the male citizen. I will structure my talk in three parts. I will first establish a dialogue between feminist, post-colonial and decolonial theories about the body politic and violence against different forms of embodiment. I will then present the movements Ele Não and Marcha das Margaridas as instances of intersectional feminist solidarities against the extreme right. In the concluding remarks, I will address the question regarding the role of feminist leadership both in fighting existential threats and in prefiguring an alternative politics of the body and of nature. In terms of data and methods, my arguments based on my ongoing empirical research on coalitions and solidarities in feminist and food sovereignty movements. I draw different types of data that are part of a research project on the Marcha das Margaridas in close collaboration with Marco Antonio Teixeira. We have documental analysis of archival material produced by the Marcha, ethnographic fieldwork and preparatory activities in Belo Horizonte in Brasília between 2016 and 2019, same structure interviews with activists that represent different social movements and NGOs in this coalition, and a protest survey conducted during the sixth edition of the Marcha in 2019. My analysis about the Ele Não draws on my own participant observation at social media at the protest event in the city of Belo Horizonte, as well as other protest acts and activities from feminist movements in this city since the year 2018. So the first point. Feminist and post-colonial thinking have brought to the fore the power relationships through which states exercise violence over bodies and territories. I want to highlight two aspects. First, the body political, that is, the definition of who constitutes the political community bound to a state. The ideals of the polity and of the sovereign power have been modeled by concerns for and of male bodies. The state crafts its policies for a male, white, cis, heterosexual, urban, able-bodied model of citizen, with disregard for the lives and experiences of diverse embodiments, among which maternity and care work, sexual and reproductive rights, and sexist violence. The second point, in post-colonial societies like Brazil, classist, racist, colonial, and sexist biopolitics have been central to state-making. Certain bodies are left unprotected or even systematically targeted by state violence. In either case, the state omits in redressing justice. The post-colonial philosopher Akil Mbembe has coined the term necropolitics to refer to post-colonial African states that create death words, namely, I'm quoting, new and unique forms of social existence in which vast populations are subjected to conditions of life conferring upon them the status of the living dead. Quotation finished. Latin American scholars have interpreted contemporary femicide as a war against women's bodies and a gendered necropolitics in the region. Latin American decolonial feminists have brought the coloniality of gender to the fore, as the coloniality of power expressed in racism is always gendered as well. Women are blamed for being in the wrong place, that is, in public spaces, at the wrong time, with the improper clothing and an immoral behavior. In short, they are blamed for the death. Rita Segato analyzed gendered violence in Latin America, not only in a contextual way due to the rise of femicide rates, but also historically, and suggested that it has been at the center of colonial modernity. In this respect, Maria Lugones incorporated a gender dimension to the decolonial project and called attention to the co-constitution of the coloniality of power and a gender system in Latin America, what she has called the modern colonial gender system. The coloniality of power and gender in Latin America means that feminized bodies are not only those of women, but also those of indigenous communities, and intersect in different ways with race and sexuality. In the colonial past, black bodies were often reduced to brutal force and sexuality in a dehumanizing way. Decolonial thought, however, highlights that coloniality is not a process in the past, a historical phase, but a persistent condition of post-colonial societies. We can thus observe contemporary dynamics in which colonial differences remain relevant for distributing life and death. Together with my colleague Marco Teixeira, we have been suggesting that an intersectional analysis of power relations and resistance in Brazil must take into account another axis of difference and inequality, namely the rural-urban difference. The persistent condition of the coloniality of power in rural settings is represented by land concentration indexes that surpass already high levels of social inequality. The reprimarization of the economy in the last two decades in Latin America was followed by the disposal of racialized, ethnicized, and of environment bodies and of environmental and rural activists. The contribution of a decolonial feminist critique to understanding sexist violence in Latin America would then include the intersection between the coloniality of nature in commodity extraction, the coloniality of power in the racialization of others, and the coloniality of gender. It would further combine the feminist critique of the binary logics of modernity and development, the narrative of linear progress contraposing tradition, modernity, rural, urban, agrarian, industrial, and the belief that interventions would improve the lives of rural subjects. This categorization contributes to make sense of the war on bodies in the agrarian frontiers. To sum up, various strands from feminist and post-colonial thinking have brought to the fore the power relationships through which states exercise violence over bodies and territories. The state crafts its policy for a male, white, cis, heterosexual, urban, able-bodied model of citizen, with disregard for the lives and experiences of diverse embodiments. In addition, sexist, racist, and colonial regimes inform a necropolitics in which the state either distributes violent deaths or omits in redressing justice. In Latin America, colonial gendered cultural wars on bodies intersect with a warlike expansion of the agrarian frontiers that threatens all alternative forms of relating to nature and territories. Nevertheless, where there is power, there is also resistance. Over the past decades, social movements and theoretical developments have contested the assumption that man is the measure of all things. Black, women, LGBTQ, and disabled bodies have been fighting both for the inclusion in the body political by demanding rights and policies to address the needs of their marginalized embodiments, as well as demanding the right to visibility, to exist in difference, to live a life free from violence. Women's and feminist movements in Latin America have organized the strongest forms of resistance to these violent wars against bodies and territories. Recent mass mobilizations in Latin America, such as Ni Una Menos, the National Front for Abortion in Argentina, student mobilizations in Chile, flood walks, and the 8th of March, have brought to the mobilizing power of feminist organizing to the fore. Some scholars have called attention to this recent wave of feminism of the masses that challenged old misconceptions of feminisms in Latin America as being minority movements most led by white, middle-class intellectual activists. Ni Una Menos, Not One Less, in Spanish, emerged from those directly affected by violence against women's bodies, assuming that violence against one woman is a violence against all women. A feminism of the 99% brought new strength to the commemorations of the 8th of March, for instance, by organizing the International Women's Strikes starting 2017. In the US, it was a reaction to the election of an outspoken misogynist president, Donald Trump. In Latin America, it was very large, particularly in Chile, building on the wave of student mobilizations that brought attention to sexist violence in universities, and recently in society and by the state at large. In Mexico, in Argentina, it was also very large. And in Argentina, it was part of the Green Wave, a strong mobilization for the right to abortion. With similarities to Black Lives Matter in the US, Black women in Brazil have protested state violence against Black youth. In addition, non-urban political subjects, in particular indigenous people, quilombolas, that is, rural communities of Black people descendants of runaway slaves, and peasant communities have been struggling to have access to public policies that support their alternative forms of economies and ecologies, as well as the right to live a life free from violence. I will now zoom into the years 2018 and 19 and show how some of these movements have reacted to the rise of extreme right in Brazil. And this I'm coming to the part 2 of my talk. In August 2018, as Bolsonaro rose in the polls, some women created the Facebook group Women United Against Bolsonaro. Within a few days, it reached 2 million members. The hashtag Ele Não, Not Him, viralized in social media, calling for action on the streets on the 29th of September. Instagram, YouTube, and WhatsApp groups provided the main platforms in which hashtags, videos, images viralized. One of the most circulated videos was uploaded by the independent media group Media Ninja and brought together self-made videos of influencers, artists, and public personalities representing diverse embodiments that felt directly threatened by the rise of Bolsonaro. The video had assembled women, black women, LGBTQ bodies, and also disabled women. They declared that Bolsonaro was a misogynist, a racist, a homophobic, and they were in favor of all forms of love and difference. Another hashtag that viralized was Se ferem minha existência, eu serei resistência. That is, if it hurts my existence, I will be resistance. Showing the feeling of an existential threat. Posts and messages circulated with the lyrics of an adapted version of the Italian anti-fascist song Bella Ciao, inviting all to learn the song for the day of the protest. The song states, "We are the women of resistance." And here I'm gonna play the song to you. So the protest march Ele Não on 29th of September 2018 became the largest women's mobilization in Brazilian history, bringing 125,000 women to the streets in São Paulo, as well as many thousands to other cities in Brazil and throughout the world. Ele Não brought together intersectional feminisms and built on previous experimentations such as slut walks, marcha das vadias, ni una menos, and the performative use of body and language in public interventions. The predominant color was purple, the color of feminism. Some wore the green bandana from the Argentina protest movement for the right to safe abortion. A big banner read, "It was for women's lives, not one less," in reference to the Latin American movement against femicide, Ni Una Menos, once more. Many flags and banners carried the image or name of Marielle Franco. Marielle Franco was a black, lesbian, favela resident and local politician in Rio de Janeiro, and she was murdered on March 14, 2018, with all evidence pointing to militias reacting to her commitment to investigate the relationships between politicians, police, and militias in favelas in Rio de Janeiro. Reactions to her death included huge protests on the streets and in online media, also calling attention to her activism for women's rights, LGBTQ rights, black and poor population rights, during her years in office. During the electoral campaigns for legislative and executive positions in local, regional, and national bodies in 2018, Marielle Franco became a symbol of the enemy for right-wing candidates, whose supporters celebrated her death. Therefore, in the act of Ele Não, all those bodies targeted by his hate speech and political program all otherness to the mainstream white, male, cisgender, heterosexual middle class, joined in alliance against Bolsonaro. Between mere numbers, the mobilization was innovative in creating an atmosphere in which various strands of feminism, competing political forces and parties peacefully shared the streets in defense of a common goal: to prevent the election of the extreme right candidate Jair Bolsonaro. During the entire electoral campaign 2018, left-wing parties and movements were unable to join their efforts in a political coalition, a situation that extends to the present moment. Another wave of women's mass mobilization started in a different manner to protest against the impunity of a women's murder, that of the rural trade union leader Margarida Alves, killed in 1983 in Paraíba, in the northeast of Brazil. The Marcha das Margaridas, often misunderstood as Daisy's March in reference to flowers, was actually named after her. She was violently murdered in front of her husband and children because of her fight for rural labor rights. Women leaders within the National Confederation of Rural Workers, whose acronym in Portuguese is CONTAG, decided to organize a collective action in the year 2000 to pressure for justice in the belated trial, as well as to claim visibility and rights for rural working women. They were fighting for maternity leave, pension rights, access to land and credits, to public health and education. They were fighting against hunger and against sexist violence. In other words, they were claiming to be included in the body politic and for policies for rural working women. Violence against women is a topic that has been present in their agenda from the start, as well as the right for a life free from all forms of violence. The Marcha das Margaridas has taken place 6 times in the years 2000, 2003, 2007, 2011, 2015, and 2019. It took between 20 and 100,000 women from across Brazil to the capital, Brasilia. You have to imagine that some of these women, they travel 4 to 7 days. They take boats, they take the bus, they come from very far away. Some of them come by plane, they come through very different ways and with different means. These women, they have achieved what many agrarian movements in Brazil could hardly do. They have united different agrarian movements in a common struggle, and they got the support of various allied NGOs and social movements. Not only is the Marcha das Margaridas a coalition of various social movements and organizations that work in partnership at the organizing committee, but also at the grassroots levels, much more overlapping memberships are possible. Church belongings, trade union belongings, social movement belonging, different ethnic identities, they overlap in the grassroots membership. In the documents that serve as basis for their process of political formation, the Marcha is presented as a mobilization of rural working women in alliance with the World March of Women and many partner entities. The political subject is situated at the intersection of class, gender, and the rural difference. I'm quoting, they call themselves, "We, rural working women from all Brazil." Rural working women are further specified as encompassing women farmers, fisherwomen, women in extractive activities such as rubber tapper women, palm and babassu coconut breakers, and forest dwellers. For the last edition, 2019, a section in the document was entitled, "Who are the Margaridas? And the answer given was, they are the working women from the fields, the forests, and the waters, who in March weave their common experiences of life and struggle. Interestingly, despite their differences, these women often share the condition of being victims of sexist violence. And as I said, violence against women in non-urban areas is further complicated by the rural difference, because here the distance to other homes are much larger and there is no hope that a neighbor would interfere or call the police. Indeed, violence against women is a topic that has always been on the agenda of the Margarida since its very first edition. However, differently from most feminist movements that tackle up the issue of sexist violence, the March das Margaridas has always embedded the topic within a more general claim for the right to live a life free from all forms of violence, making reference to the vulnerability of the situation of the rural poor in the frontiers of commodity extraction. So they not only expose in their documents sexist violence, but they also make reference to human trafficking in zones of mining, forced evictions, criminalization of activists, death threats for land activists. So they bring together the various forms of violence at the countryside, and in how that affects particularly women. So they also make reference to prostitution, to teenage child sexual labor, sexual prostitution, and human trafficking. Over the last 20 years, the March das Margaridas became an important collective action of the workers and rural movements. After considerable discussion as to whether to anticipate the sixth edition of the march from August 2019 to August 2018, because of the rise of Bolsonaro in the polls, and thus as a means to organize collective mass resistance, the organizing committee of the March das Margaridas decided against it. One reason was the lack of time to organize a sustained and grassroots process of mobilization, because the marches mobilizing process starts almost a year before the actual protest. Beyond organizational matters, there was a political decision at stake. Was it women's responsibility to try to influence electoral politics and turn the election prognostics around? So they decided that they would not be responsible for that. They didn't want all those hopes on their march, because they also did not want that their march would be focused on Bolsonaro. It was a broader issue, and let's see what happened. So the march finally took place in 2019 as planned. And it became one of the main mass movements, along with the general strike for education in May 2019, that showed the strength of popular resistance to the Bolsonaro government. So for those who don't know, there was a cut in the budgets for universities and in education in general at the beginning of Bolsonaro's government, and this took students to the streets, teachers to the streets, and there was a huge strike for education during May 2019, and they got some victories. But apart from that, the march wasn't the biggest protest. So the march leaders, because of that, because it was one of the main protests against Bolsonaro's government, like street protests, the march leaders saw the proliferation of interest from men wanting to make speeches and to be part of the March das Margaridas. So the leaders were concerned with those who only wanted to boost their own political capital. And they finally found a clear orientation towards the need of gatekeeping. The message was, Demarche das Margaridas is an action from the women's organization. Women leaders decide who gets political space, and those who are allowed in must recognize that they play a side role next to the protagonism of women's struggles. Such negotiations about the inclusion of men, or those not identified as women at Demarche das Margaridas, made it clear that Demarche was open for allies from the left, but aimed at transforming the left into having a feminist consciousness. Another novelty in the March of 2019 was the collaboration with the first March of Indigenous Women. 3,000 Indigenous women came to Brasília from the 9th to the 14th of August to protest. Both marches articulated their alliance in official moments, such as the plenary session at the National Congress and in the opening ceremony, and they marched together on the streets. Indigenous women were fighting against the backlash in their rights under the new government. They were fighting against the decision of Bolsonaro to not proceed in any demarcation of indigenous land, of suspending indigenous health systems, and the increase of violence in indigenous reserves due to the advancement of logging and land grabbing. And finally, coming to my concluding remarks. So now I turn to the opening question. Why did feminist alliances lead resistance to the conservative backlash in Brazil? I first provide my reading about the conservative backlash, and then I suggest 3 tentative answers. Building upon post-colonial, decolonial and feminist accounts of violence, bodies and territories, I have argued for an understanding of the conservative backlash in Brazil as asymmetrical alliances for an anti-intersectional intersectionality. It is a reaction against all movements that have challenged the embodied partiality of white, urban, middle-class, heterosexual, patriarchal men that provides the model of citizenship and the abstract model of the body politic. It is further a reaction against alternative forms of existence in the rural areas and the forests of Brazil, such as indigenous peoples, quilombola communities, and peasant communities. Elected with a wide support from interest groups demanding the deregulation of land and the erosion of environmental protection, Bolsonaro has proclaimed the goal to make indigenous people more likely us humans. He thus suggests a body politic modeled once again in the supposedly abstract man and the erase of all differences in the name of a post-racial, post-ethnic, and post-feminist nation. So, why did feminist alliances like Ele Não in Marcha das Margaridas led mass resistance to Bolsonaro? First, body and nature, both deeply material as well as symbolic, explicitly materialize the violent relations of domination at stake in the entanglements between the global capitalist and ecological crisis and the social struggles in Brazil. Feminist resistance has meant fighting for the rights of certain bodies to exist and not to be erased for a renewed homogenizing discourse of an abstract citizen, as well as a dominant model of economy and ecology in rural spaces. Second, feminist organizing within rural movements and beyond have excelled in their politics of alliances. Aware of their weaker minority position within left politics, they have historically depended on forging alliances. As the rank and file grassroots of many popular movements, women are more used to the hardships of having to accept contradictions and live with them without having to reach consensus. However, it's not their responsibility alone to reverse the conservative backlash. Online activism and assembling bodies on the streets will not suffice in forging a viable coalition for an electoral alternative that will democratically challenge Bolsonaro's government in the next elections. Nevertheless, their struggles against the warring bodies and their fight to the right to exist otherwise have become sites in which creative politics of solidarity most flourish. Finally, far from restricting the agendas to women's struggles, they have led the defense of democratic politics, universal social policies, and alternative development models. Feminist organizing aims to redefine the contours of modern politics and subjectivities, of modern economies and ecologies. The politics of the body in new waves of feminist organizing that are occupying the internet and the streets in Brazil challenge this disciplinary power over their bodies and experiment with new forms of embodiment. Feminist organizing within movements of the rural poor have led also in the construction of different modes of relating to the environment, such as agroecological transitions. Body matters and nature become vehicles to experiment and establish new relations. Thank you.